if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 318. This is our 2024 Open Championship Tips podcast. Paul Williams joins me, Steve Bamford, discuss the 152nd Open from Royal Troon. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
I'm okay. Have you recovered from your 3 days of work over the weekend for all of the content?
What, that combined with the football on Sunday night as well? Yeah, that was enough to put a dampener and everything. But we've got a good week to look forward to with the golf, so let's put that to one side, shall we?
We have. Visit our world-famous Golf Betting System website, where we have our full suite of Open Championship stats. We've got research articles, Paul's betting preview. We've got a long shot preview as well, and predictor models for the Open, new and old. All of that content is available across both events, free of charge. There is no paywall. Paul is at Golf Betting on X. I am at Bamford Golf. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel, where this podcast is available. Now, you guys, as listeners, power this podcast, so we need your 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. Now, Deeds here doesn't do that, but I know that he's in the UK. So, Deeds72, thank you for your 5-star review. It's entitled Gives You What You Need. First thing is the theme tune. It's a thing of beauty. Overall podcast gives you great overview of what's gone on and what's to come. I particularly like the more obscure tips, such as Kevin Kisner at 1,000 to 1. Keep up the good work. Deeds, thanks for your effort, mate. Much appreciated.
Brilliant stuff. Thanks for taking the time to write in. And that theme tune gets an awful lot of positives, doesn't it?
It does.
Sam did us a good one there.
I saw Sam was up at the Scottish Open doing a concert last Friday.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was out there on the piano. Hope that went well. I hope some of the listeners managed to pop along and listen in to him throw out some of the old classics.
The old classics. Talking of old classics, Paul, there was an old classic last week. I got another second place, as did you.
Yep. Yeah.
We had 3 of the 5 in the playoff. Now, from memory, a couple of weeks before that, we had 3 of the guys that finished 2nd at the Rocket Mortgage Classic as well. But this time around, lo and behold, clearly I ended up with a 2nd, but you know, that's just standard. You ended up with a 2nd. You have had a winner recently with our Italian friend, Migliozzi. But Barry actually landed a winner. Harry Hall. Congratulations to Barry. For those of you wondering where he is, he's probably walking on the old course. Not at Troon, but at St Andrews right at this point. Mm. So unfortunately, he can't join us for this week's Open Championship Tips pod. But yes, Harry Hall landed by the podcast last week, I believe, 60 to 1.
Yeah, he was in that kind of bracket, wasn't it? Yeah. And Barry put a good case up for him towards the end of the podcast. So yeah, brilliant stuff from Harry Hall to win that in the playoff. Disappointing for me and you again, Steve. And I won't ask you how many second place finishes you've had now, because I'm sure it's etched onto your brain. But yeah, Rico Hoey played well. Pearson Coody, who I was on at 80s, led from the very start. And I don't know, there was a few of them just made a few kind of almost DP World Tour-like wobbles on the back nine without anything major. But when you'd expect one or two of them just to go forward and make a couple of birdies and separate them from the guys in the clubhouse, it didn't happen. And yeah, left this monster playoff, as you say.
One thing about Pearson, he didn't actually do a great deal wrong.
Mm.
And birdied 18 to make the playoff.
Yeah.
Now, that shows cojones. Rick O'Hoey, of course, made bogey. So I like the fact that Pearson actually birdied 18 to get himself into that playoff. Showed some fortitude and didn't really throw the tournament away, really, on the basis Harry Hall chipped in from 43 feet from off the green to win it. So yep. I don't think Pearson lost that tournament. I just think he was beaten by Harry Hall. So I think it was an impressive performance from Coody.
Yep.
We may hear more of him later on in the podcast.
We may do.
Over in Scotland, Robert McIntyre, hometown boy. I did mention him in the pod.
You did indeed.
Didn't put a penny on him. But I did thought he would go well.
You made a bit of a case for him as well, didn't you?
So, pardon? I did make a case for him. Yeah, I didn't put a penny on him, though. I was on Tom Kim and Min Woo Lee.
Yeah, Kim played all right on the back nine on Sunday. Min Woo, his putter was absolutely ice cold. Talking of ice cold putters, Hao Tong Lee. I backed Hao Tong Lee at 400 to 1. Not for first round leader, which would have given me at least a return if I had it done. From tee to green, Hao Tong Lee was incredible. And I'm talking the kind of numbers that you don't expect to see from Hao Tong Lee. Statistically, you look at the strokes gained, I think he was something like third for off the tee and third for tee to green. But just eyeballing his rounds as he was going through the 4 days, it was exceptional. And I talked about how good a putter he is. The putting was absolutely abysmal. He was missing absolutely everything.
Yeah. So let me get this straight. He did the complete direct opposite of the strategy that you tipped him up for, where he was literally the best putter in the whole of world golf.
Yep. And he was outstanding from tee to green. Next time I see Hao Tong Lee, I can't not back him because...
Yeah, he's percolating big style, isn't he?
Absolutely. If he has literally found something with long game, then that putter, it does blow on hot and cold. Doesn't tend to blow as cold as that, but it does tend to blow a little bit hot and cold. He combines that with anything like... even a neutral putting week last week, and I think it had been right in the mix. A normal Hao Tong Lee putting week last week, he'd have won that by 5. Easy. So, yeah, tinged with a little bit of disappointment there. But that's a real drama again on Sunday, wasn't there? It looked like Adam Scott had done enough to win the Scottish Open, but Bob had different ideas, didn't he, on the back nine. I think he deserved a bit of luck after the previous year where Rory basically picked his pocket, didn't he, over the final two holes?
Yeah, he hit that shot in sort of gusting 40 mile an hour winds to 3 feet on the 18th to just steal it from Robert.
Absolutely, yeah. To do what he did over the last couple of holes was incredible last year from Rory, but massive break for McIntyre this year on the par five. I mean, that could have been absolutely anything, that score from the lie he had, but makes eagle and then makes that huge putt on 18 as well. Could almost hear that down here in the south of England when he made that putt. It was a proper roar, but yeah, fair play to him. It was good to see. It's good to see a little bit of emotion and excitement when your players haven't quite made the end of it.
The Scots haven't had a top grade player for many, 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 many a year. But I think Robert's proved, or started to prove, clearly over the last couple of months with the Canadian win and now the Scottish win. He does like a national open, does Robert? One for the thought processes out there. He's proven that he can mix it at the very highest level. Clearly, Ryder Cup from last year. So one of those. No, it's hopefully a player Scotland can stay behind. It's going to be at the elite levels of golf over the coming years.
He's certainly on a massive upward trajectory. Top 20 in the world now in that kind of bracket as well, isn't he? It's a big step forward in his career.
There's definitely something in there about fescue bent Poana kind of greens moving future for courses that you're going to have to target in the States. Clearly, they don't play a lot on fescue over there, but there is a lot of Poana and bent Poa. His victory at Hamilton was on bent Poa greens. He clearly grew up in Oban, played on his dad's golf course, tiny golf course, plenty of hills. That would feature Poana. So, yeah, you can see logic to it. I'm not sure he's a Bermuda grass golfer, Robert McIntyre, but for sure, the kind of more northerly United States agronomy is, or West Coast is probably where we're looking for him or looking out for him in the future.
Yep, no, I agree.
Chance for this week? When was the last time we saw a player go Scottish Open win, Open Championship win? I get a feeling it was Phil Mickelson.
Yeah, it was Lefty, wasn't it?
2013.
It's... You've seen the prices on him. I saw him as low as 12 or 14 to 1.
What? Like,
there's some obscenely short prices.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, it's, wow.
18 to 1. I'm exaggerating slightly. But yeah, right now, Betfair, Paddy Power, both 18 to 1 on Bob McIntyre. That's
18 to 1 to win the Open. Who'd have thought that? If you'd have said that in sort of April, May, when he was struggling to make a cut in the States, you'd go, yeah, absolutely crazy.
That's the same, you know, that's the same price as you can get with Bryson with some firms. Colin Morikawa. Yeah, it's... He could go well. Whether he can literally go bang, bang and win an Open Championship, well, we will find out, won't we?
Anything to say about what happened on 16 with Robert? There was a load of stuff I saw on X about cheating and
I don't. You know, we've seen the audio of how it all unfolded, and you know, if there's a sprinkler head there, there's a sprinkler head there, and he seems an honest chap. Generally, it's. Don't get me wrong, it was an incredibly huge break for that to transpire, because the position his ball was in, you know, it's a chop out at best. It's one of those that could get tangled up, and then you're, you know, what's he looking at there? He's potentially looking at a 5, 6, 7, you know, anything could have happened. And he managed to drop the ball into a much more amenable position. Incredible shot. To leave himself 6 foot or so for eagle, which he makes, and it, you know, it completely flips the tournament on its head. Someone quoted 16 to 1 to win the tournament at that point when the ball's in the rough, and you know, from there, you know, one favourable drop and one decent shot, and suddenly you're back into the you know, into a winning position, which he had to take. Ultimately, he had to make that putt on 18, which showed, you know, an incredible amount of determination and will to do that, which, you know, ultimately won in the tournament. But yeah, he could have easily lost the tournament on the 16th. But yeah, the cheating, no, not for me. It's just one of the quirks of the game where, you know, you can get favourable drops from all sorts of positions. You know, TV towers. That was Xander a few weeks ago, wasn't it, where he got an incredible drop.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
Where there was a wire in his line of sight or something. It's
Players know the rules and will push those rules to the maximum for their own benefit. That's just part of being a professional golfer.
Yeah, oh for sure.
And anyone's naive to think that shouldn't happen. Well, that's just ridiculous, isn't it?
Yep, you got to play the game.
Right. 2024 Open Championship. This is likely to be our biggest, most listened to podcast of 2024. Welcome along, listeners. Just wanted to highlight a couple of bookmakers before we move. Bet365 have gone a standard 8 places each way at the Open for their default market. Via their each way extra facility, they are also offering 10 and 12 places each way. There is a bet £10, get £30 in free bets, new customer proposition available via our golf betting system website. Also want to highlight Betfred. They have gone default 10 places each way at the 2024 Open, which they have done across all of the majors, 10 places each way, default market for all of the majors in 2024. They also have a boosted promo code SUMMER50 sign-up offer, which I have to say, I might actually take advantage of because I haven't got a Betfred account. But they're offering bet £10, get £50 in free bets over the summer at the moment. So that's a decent enough offer. And they're offering 10 places each way at a 50 odds at the 2024 Open. I know that, Paul, you have placed 3 of your 4 tips with said bookmakers. So I've also got a couple of them involved in my long shots this week as well. So 2 decent sign-up offers there, both from Bet365 and from Betfred. I will put links through to those 2 offers within the podcast description box. Right, what do you make of Royal Troon, Paul? And I have to say, clearly, we are making this podcast pretty early on Tuesday morning of tournament week. There seems to be potentially a bit of a fox in the coop this week, Paul. Wherever you listen to content, I expect you'll hear, a standard wind here of northwesterly, which makes the opening 7 holes the holes where you actually score on the old course here at Royal Troon, because effectively you've got the wind behind you. And forecasts are forecasts, and forecasts are definitely forecasts in Scotland, where the weather can change to 4 seasons within half an hour of one day. But it does tend to suggest that the prevailing northwesterly story here that we saw in 2016, and as we have seen across most opens here, is not likely to happen. It potentially could flip-flop completely the other way. Do you want to take us through some of the basic details of the course, and also, I know, and I am emphasising this, a weather forecast? If you want more details on the course, I would suggest you check out episode 316, which is our research podcast, which we pull together for that purpose. But what are your thoughts on the course, key skills required, you think, and this weather forecast, Paul?
It's going to create an interesting dynamic, isn't it? We almost have to become amateur weather forecasters at this point in the year, don't we, to try and work out what's going to happen. The course, yeah, let's just touch on that quickly first, because as you say, we talked about it a lot on the preview pod, the very basics for those who don't want to go through and listen to that pod, but I very much recommend it, because we'd had a good chat for an hour or so with me, yourself and Barry to talk through some of the nuances of the course and the trends and stuff like that. 7,385 yard par 71. It's hosted the Open 7 times, most recently in 2016, when there was that memorable tussle between Henrik Stenson and Phil Mickelson back then. The pair were absolutely streets ahead of everyone else in the field, with Stenson winning at 20 under in the end. Third place, for reference, was 6 under, so that shows you how far ahead that pair were. Typical links affair, west coast of Scotland, and you got these iconic holes like the postage stamp on the, which is the 8th, and the 6th, which is now the longest hole in Open Championship history at 623 yards. But yeah, let's touch on the weather, because that is pretty critical. And as you say, Steve, the prevailing wind here is northwest.
Yeah.
As we've gone through, well, from last week onwards and over the weekend, it's been a little bit up in the air as to how this is going to play out. But it looked at one point like it was going to be some kind of low pressure systems blowing into the west coast of Scotland, and it might get up to 15, 20 mile an hour with lots of rain. It now looks, and this is really quite fluid because it's changed a bit since I wrote my preview yesterday. It now looks like high pressure is trying to enter kind of the southern part of Ireland and the southern part of the UK as well, which is pushing southerly winds up towards the west coast of Scotland. Now, they are going to combine with some of these low pressure systems, particularly potentially over the weekend and into Sunday. But it means the wind direction is likely to be southwest and increasingly moving round towards the south. Now, if you look at the course map and how it's oriented in terms of its direction, that would then mean that an awful lot of holes will play with significant crosswinds. Now, how significant depends on the speed of the wind. And we're looking at kind of 10 to 15 mile an hour generally at the moment. It'll gust more than that, of course. And this is coastal golf. So, you know, you can often feel the impact of the wind, particularly on an exposed course, more readily than you can on many other courses. But yeah, as you said, Steve, I think it's going to create an interesting dynamic as to how, you know, how it's going to impact play and potentially the severity and the difficulty of the course, how it plays, how it pans out.
Yeah.
It's
kind of changing the dynamics of what we've seen in the past on its head if it sticks.
Mm.
That, you know, there's an idea out there, quite with a standard wind direction, there is a thought process out there that a Rory, a Bryson, rather than going with iron off the first tee, will be hitting driver and trying to drive the green. And you can kind of see that idea, although if you're kind of missing it right, you probably ended up in the Irish Sea. So, you know, it's a risk and reward kind of thing. But with this forecast with headwinds, and then a lot of the holes, like the seventh is where that's the first hole that changes from a northwest to southwest direction, actually, or southeast direction. Actually, it turns westly to easterly.
Mm.
And that's the first tough hole of the golf course. And if this forecast was to stick, all of a sudden you're standing on a very exposed tee, with a right to left wind taking you towards some rather large pot bunkers in the fairway and some tremendously high rough on the left-hand side of the fairway. And your second shot is then into a green that is defended by a huge sandbank behind it and around the side of it, which will basically have no wind getting to it. So, and that's where the postage stamps located. So it's adding some severe complexities just to one hole. I mean, if you look at the railway hole as well, you're going to be having a wind that's coming in and off the left, standing on the tee, which when you've got the railway literally 10 yards to your right-hand side, must be quite troublesome for the best players in the world, let alone those that aren't the best players in the world in the field.
Yeah.
So, yeah, interesting to see. One to keep your eye on, I think.
Well, it is, and you know, I think it is still quite fluid. It does look like it's going to be kind of drizzly, murky for much of the 4 days. So I think that seems to be quite a given. It could be if this low pressure kind of wins out a little bit towards the weekend. It could be that Sunday is really quite nasty, and we could see stronger winds maybe up into the 15-20 mile an hour bracket, and which will certainly make things tricky. And combined with maybe some stronger rain as well. So, yeah, we'll keep an eye on it. There's not much you can do about it as a punter particularly. You know, you can't try and preempt or, you know, make too many assumptions as to how this is going to pan out, because you could have a draw bias. You could, you could have players that literally get blown off the course in a short period of time because of the way things manifest. But it certainly makes it more interesting, I think. If it was just a dead calm flat 4 days,
yeah,
then yeah, is it that's not what an Open Championship
is. Minus 19 wins it.
I typically minus 12, minus 13 has often been a kind of score that's been the right kind of winning score around here. I think the totals that Stenson and Mickelson got to in 2016 were a bit of an outlier, really. So, yeah, I think it will keep a lid on scoring. I don't think it's going to be brutally tough. I think it will be that kind of number, but just enough to keep the players honest and keep the interest levels up, I think.
Also worthy of note, and you might not hear this on another podcast, It looks like most of the tournament is going to be played at 15 degrees Celsius, which is 59 Fahrenheit. I'm mentioning this for our North American buddies. The warmest looks like Friday afternoon at a whopping 18 degrees Celsius, which is 64 Fahrenheit. A lot of American golfers will not like those conditions.
No.
Especially with a little bit of drizzle thrown in as well. You might get a few just wanting to hop back on the charter flight on Friday night.
Yeah, and if the sun comes out at that kind of temperature up there, it does feel really quite pleasant. But yeah, it's that looks few and far between in terms of the forecast.
Do you think we might see a few morning bobble hats and mitts?
Yeah, I don't know. We're not quite getting down to ground frost kind of level, but
We should open a market up.
Yeah, first player to wear mitts. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Snooded player.
I can remember Hunter Mahan one year that we went. I think it was Turnberry Pool. I remember him in some mitts.
Mm.
2009.
That wasn't even cold stuff. I remember getting sunburned that week.
So, yeah, we were getting sunburned and he was standing there in mitts and a bubble hat.
Yeah, we must have admitted.
It was like he was from a different planet.
Yeah, we needed a bit more factor 50 that week.
But that says more about the UK's climate than it does about Hunter Mahan's fashion taste, I think you'll find. Mm. Right, Paul, we have a 5-1 and slightly drifting favourite this week in Scotty Scheffler.
Mm. We do. Yeah.
Is there a weakness there, you think? Or can you see Scotty getting his second major of the year?
Is there a weakness? For a player who's won 6 times this year, and you know, bear
difficult
in mind,
question. I'm sorry to throw you under
the
bus.
No, you're right. We need to discuss these guys at the top. But yeah, Arnold Palmer, when he won back in 62, he'd won 6 times in the season. You know, Scotty could quite reasonably do exactly the same thing. The thing I'll say about Scotty is, if you look at his Open Championship record versus the other majors, it's relatively, and this, you know, take it all with you know, a dose of realism, it's relatively poor. 8th is his best, and yeah, 5-1, and that's drifted out. I'm seeing 11-2. There's the odd 6-1 in places, so he's moving in that direction. Didn't play last week. So whether the Scottish Open, you know, a renaissance test, which is going to be a little bit easier this year than it was the previous years, and maybe not quite such a relevant warm-up. Whether the fact that Scotty missed that, skipped that, is of relevance, don't know. Had he played well, his price would have probably gone, you know, either held or it had gone the other direction. Rory is kind of moving in the similar direction in the market as well. So 8-1 I'm seeing in places. Again, he opened shorter than that. And it's a similar kind of equation there, isn't it? You know, he did play last week, was kind of in the mix, but didn't really put together the performance that you'd expect for him to go and win the tournament. Did he really want to win the tournament is another factor.
Yeah. You know, exactly.
You know, would you accept, you know, he's gone out there, he's just knocked a little bit of rust off, because we knew he took the break after the US Open, knocked a bit of rust off, still finished 4th. You know, I think you could spin that narrative either way, really.
Yep.
8-1. I mean, there's been massive move for the likes of Ludvig Åberg. He was, it's 14-1 now, but given that he played so well for the first 3 days last week in Scotland, the price on Ludvig absolutely got hammered, didn't it? Kind of 20-1 down to, yeah, where he is now.
Mentioned in his Monday interview yesterday that he's having trouble with the driver and he's struggling with the swing on the driver, hence a lot of inaccuracy across the weekend at Renaissance. Now, whether you can get away with that this week,
yeah,
I'm not so sure. I'll tell you the number that gets me here, Paul. Henrik Stenson, the week before he won the tournament at Troon, he was 13th at the Scottish Open. I think back then they used to play at Loch Lomond.
Yep.
Might be wrong. He ranked 1st for total driving, 5th for ball striking. The outing before that, BMW International Open, 1st for total driving, 1st for ball striking. I'm looking at Rory McIlroy's last two sets of numbers. He was first for total driving and first for ball striking at the US Open, which he threw away in the last few holes. Get that. I thought that his Scottish Open performance was very, very impressive based upon the fact that he was getting the media bombardment. Everyone was telling him that his caddy's not up to the job, that he'd been sitting in a dark room, blah, blah, blah. He comes up, he finishes a very competitive fourth, first for driving distance, 10th for driving accuracy, first for total driving, second for ball striking. So I'm on Rory. I know it's ridiculous, and I know there's going to be hundreds, if not thousands, of people out there. I mean, I was on Andy Lack's podcast last week, and Andy said he cannot, and he's been true to his word, he cannot back Rory at single digits at a major anymore. And he's been, you know, he's been burnt so many times. I just got a positive feeling. Of the top two, I personally would take McIlroy over Scheffler. And I cannot see a world where Rory is not somewhere in the mix come Sunday.
Yeah.
Oh, so I took him, and you know this because it was on the research podcast last week. I took him at 8.2 on the exchange as of last Thursday.
Yep.
So I've kind of got that 7-1 price in the bank.
Yeah. You'd expect him to be in the vicinity. The negatives with Rory are the ones that have been played out and are, you know, have been discussed ad nauseum over the last few days and weeks, where he's found himself in positions countless times to win that elusive major. That it's 10 years now, isn't it, since his PGA Championship win back in 2014, his last win. Does he turn that round? You know, he's the kind of player who will have spent those last 2 or 3 weeks really contemplating how he manages to overcome that, because he's got all the talent in the world. And the final part, the final piece of the jigsaw, as we saw at the US Open, is just that kind of that mental step that you need to take to win that next major. It's not as if he hasn't done it. He's done it multiple times, so he can do it. We know he can do it. He can win, or has won, countless regular tournaments. It's not about being able to do it in general. It's about just in the heat of that Open or the major championship final hole or two, can he pull the shot?
I agree. You listen to this. This is his Open Championship record since 2014. First, fifth, fourth, second, missed cut, 46th, third, sixth.
Yeah.
So, at 8-1, I'll take a punt that he's going to be involved in some kind of contention come Sunday. I don't know if the forecast suits or doesn't suit, but I think the forecast, if it does come right, will actually potentially take away some of those non-linksy elites that on a calm, soft course that where 19 under is the winning total could be part of the actual equation.
Yeah.
Naturally, if you look at last year's tournament, there weren't many real elites at the top end of the leaderboard when Brian Harman won.
No.
Jason Day, Sepp Straka, Tom Kim. I know they're good players, but they wouldn't have been threatening the top five or six places in the betting market on Thursday morning when the players teed off. The only one that was there or thereabouts was Rory. I'm on Rory.
Yeah, no, I get that. And it's difficult to try and pick a hole in it, because the only hole you can possibly pick is this kind of... What's his mental state kind of right now? But yeah, fourth last week, and if that was just a little loosener ahead of this week, then you'd expect him to be in the mix. Whether he can, whether he can find the putts or the shots or make the right decisions at the business end will determine whether he wins or not.
Agreed. Couldn't agree more. But if you said to me, Steve, Here's £10 with Paddy Power. Are you going to have 7-1 Rory McIlroy or 10-1 Ludvig Åberg? It's not even a question.
Yeah. Oh, it's Ludvig's debut. You know, best will in the world. Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah, we saw Colin Morikawa win on debut back in 2021, and that was you know, an out, a massive outlier.
It was.
Generally, you've got to have some pretty extensive and good Open Championship links experience to better do it. Morikawa back then, Morikawa now is, you know, an incredible talent. Ludwig is an incredible talent. If there's one player who could overcome that, it probably is Ludwig. But yeah, I'm not sure I'd be rushing off to back him at what is touching in places single figures. It's pretty damn short.
Who's your top selection this week then, Paul? I can hear the listeners shouting, demanding your top pick.
Yeah, well, in terms of the top pick, yeah, I've got a shorter selection, but I've stuck him in second place, which I'll talk through in a second. But yeah, my top selection is Shane Lowry, and I backed him at 35-1 with 8 places yesterday. You can get up to 45-1 as ever. Depending how you want to play this, there's a massive differential in prices. So if you want to take the bog standard each way places, you can get up to 45-1. I took 35-1, 8 places each way, and that was with Bet365. Now, Shane Lowry, I think any kind of damp, potentially breezy forecast plays right into his hands. I mean, you can't forget Boutre back in 2009 when he won the Irish Open as an amateur. I mean, conditions that week were absolutely filthy, and I don't think it's going to be quite that bad, although Sunday has the potential to be a bit gnarly. His Royal Port Rush victory back in 2019, that was no picnic either in terms of the conditions, so he can do it. I don't think he particularly likes playing in poor weather. He's moved over to the States and he gets much more sun nowadays, doesn't he? But I think he's undoubtedly one of the best equipped in the field to deal with anything that's thrown at him. He didn't play at Renaissance, so we haven't got a view as to how he played last week. Last time we saw him, or last time there was any sight of him, was when he was at Royal Troon the week before playing some practice rounds. Braving the conditions there. It was particularly breezy then. Braving the conditions in his short trousers, which is just generally Shane, I guess. But yeah, given that he's gone out there and got some hands-on experience very recently of how the course might play, whereas the other guys have been out playing a relatively soft and easy Renaissance, I think that's far better preparation. It's clearly what he chose to do and how he wanted to approach the tournament. So that's his prerogative. And I don't think that would do him any harm whatsoever. In terms of the trends, Lowry for me is an absolute full house, and that's why I've put him up top. World number 33. He won the Zurich Classic alongside Rory back in April to give him some confidence going into this stretch of the season. Progressive form coming into this, 49th, 19th, and then 9th over his last three outings. Shot a 62 in that most recent performance. That was at the Travelers Championship. He was 6th earlier this season at the US PGA Championship. Again, he shot a 62 in that tournament. Switched putters back at the Zurich Classic, and he produced his career best putting round at the US PGA Championship. So yeah, something kind of clicked there. I think really for a guy, we know what Shane's ball striking is like, but he's been extremely positive. He's really talked up his long game. He's actually said in an interview this year that his 2024 tee to green performance is the best that he's ever experienced. He feels his game, his long game, is at the very peak right now.
Here's an example. He was third last time out of the Travelers for strokes gained on approach.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's playing nicely.
He is playing nicely, and I think if you combine that with a putter, which can again blow hot and cold for Shane, you combine that with a putter that's working nicely. He's got a majestic short game. The conditions suit. There wasn't one hole that I could pick in Shane Lowry's chances this week. And you're getting him, at a price which is you're certainly below the top 12, 15 in the market for Shane Lowry. So yeah, I couldn't choose to not back him. And I know Barry's not with us, but I'd be astounded if Barry isn't on Shane as well this week. And I don't know, you got any interest in Shane?
I am. I backed him.
There you go.
I have to, on my strokes gained analysis, I have to go back to Phil Mickelson at the PGA in 2022, where a player has not ranked either in the top five for strokes gained putting, the outing before they won the major, or in the top 25 of my rolling strokes gained putting metric.
Mm.
And Shane Lowry is sitting there because his putting earlier in the year was abysmal. And that would kind of tally with the fact that you're saying that he's been doing so much work on his approach play, which he clearly has. And as we know, look at the PGA Tour driving accuracy stats. And I still think this week is going to be a test of driving line rather than driving length. This is all going to be about hitting fairways and avoiding those huge pot bunkers.
Mm.
Lowry's driving accuracy this year has been a revelation. A bit like Rory's. Been an absolute revelation. Now that the putter's come back, Lowry's sitting there top 17 for strokes gained putting over the last 8 weeks.
Mm.
I think with the weather forecast, I think he's a great play. I really do love him. So, yeah, I'm on Lowry. I was on 35-1, bet 3-6-5, 8 places each way.
Yeah. No, I think that's the play. I think that's the way to tackle this. So, yeah, I'm sure we'd all be, well, you and I definitely, and I'm sure Barry would be on as well. So Shane at the top. The one who's shorter, nearer the top of the market, I do fancy is Colin Morikawa. I backed him at 16-1. That was with the full 10 places with Betfred. And I mentioned earlier that he won the 2021 Open Championship at Sandwich. That was on debut. He has missed the cut twice since in his subsequent Open Championships, but I think he could bounce back this week with a really strong contending performance. You talked about driving accuracy. He's second on the PGA Tour for driving accuracy. That will certainly help keep him out of the trouble that he's dotted. Well, not so much dotted, is all around the course here at Royal Troon. 16th for strokes gained off the tee, 8th for strokes gained tee to green. Long game is in really good shape. He finished 4th also at Renaissance last week. He was better, actually. One area that he has been not quite up to his normal self over the course of 2024 has been his approach play, but he gained over half a stroke per round with his approaches last week. That seems to be moving in the right direction. And he's threatened more than once at the major championships this year. 3rd at Augusta, 4th at Valhalla, 14th at Pinehurst as well. Knocking on the door, 3rd major championship could well arrive if Shane doesn't run away with it at the top of the market. But yeah, those two for me. I've got a couple more who are kind of in the 50 bracket. You got any more than that kind of sub 50 area, Steve?
I haven't, because I've effectively got Rory. Morikawa to me is the 2024 Henrik Stenson.
Yep.
So I can see the logic. Don't know if the forecast suits. But yeah, I just can't get close to him at 16-1.
Mm-hmm.
Not when I'm backing Rory at 7s, 8s. There's a lot of love for Fleetwood as ever. There's a hell of a lot of love for Tyrrell Hatton, quite rightly. Tyrrell's got an excellent record over here in the UK at Lynx Golf Courses.
Yeah.
Is he a two-time winner at St Andrews? Or it's definitely once.
Yeah, he's won the Dunhill Links. He's well capable, isn't he? Loves a bigger standard event on the European or DP World Tour. The Rolex level stuff, he's just mopped those kind of level events up like they're going out of fashion back in the day.
Because I've got the triple digit selections this week, I've kept some of my usual betting fund back for those three selections, so I'm a bit limited really. I know that Barry's on Aaron Rye, isn't he? At a bigger price.
Yes. Yeah.
Just to get that out there.
Yeah, I know. I can understand that. He's been with Aaron for the last couple of weeks. Actually snuck a bit of an each way place last week. And that was a good performance from Aaron, actually, because he needed that to qualify for this week. Despite his world ranking, and I think he would have ended up being the second or third alternate for this.
Yeah.
anyway, but took the bull by the horns and got himself qualified by rights. So that shows a bit of determination. And we've touched on his improved putting, haven't we, over the last couple of podcasts. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him threaten a place. It's not a bad shout, I don't think.
I don't want to steal your thunder, but I'm on Tom Kim.
Yep. He's a good bet, I think, isn't he?
It's 11th for tee to green last week. And we've said good incoming form, very, very important when you look at Open Championship winners.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, his isn't sterling. It's not stellar. You know, it's not frighteningly obvious. But he's within the top 25 across my strokes gained current form rankings. So it's okay. It's certainly within the top 25 in this field. But yeah, fourth in Canada. He was clearly T1 at the Travelers when he had his love-in with Scheffler. And then we had all of the shenanigans on the 18th hole, which meant the hole had to be recut, blah, 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 for the playoff. A very fast finishing 15th last week. And I don't know if this is a stat that you're going to use, but I'm going to use it anyway. If I could find it, I would assume that he was very, very strong for his final 36-hole score at the Scottish Open. Because he was there or thereabouts around the cut line on Friday. And then, lo and behold, gets a top 15 finish at the end of the tournament.
Yeah. No.
So I just think he's peaking. And if there's one major that I would... Well, if it's the major that... People would say to me over a pint, Steve, what's the one major you think Tom Kim's got the best chance of winning? I would say an Open Championship.
Yep.
Because he isn't the longest off the tee. You know, he won't suit a PGA Championship at 7,900 yards. He won't suit Augusta, which is plays at circa 7,900 yards, the way they set the course up. If a PGA's played at a shorter course or a tighter US Open, maybe, yes. But an Open Championship is right up his alley because he likes short to medium golf courses, non-par 72s. Mm. So, yeah, great win player as well. Sneakily good in the wind, Tom Kim. I don't know what you've got to add over and above that. Probably plenty more.
Yeah, there's an awful lot to like about Tom, isn't there?
I think so.
Talking about his weekend performance, I think you're right. He... would have had no expectations going into the weekend because he was a long way back. It wasn't going to happen. But it's almost as if he just kind of tapped the accelerator on the back nine on Sunday just to see what was under the bonnet. And he would have been really quite pleased with the response because he was knocking everything to 5, 6, 8, 10 feet, making a lot of the putts. Came home in a bogey 330 on Sunday. And it was just knocking the pins out. So that's got to give him an immense amount of confidence coming into this. I backed him last year at Hoylake. And you remember he went home he shot 74 on the first day. So I thought that was him done. Went home that evening to his rented apartment or house or whatever it was and then sprained his ankle. So then there was the news on Friday morning that Tom Kim's limping around and you're thinking, well, shot 74, this is it, he's gone. And from there, on virtually one leg, he managed to shoot 68, 68, 67 and finish, yes, a distant, but second place behind Brian Harman, which... I thought it was a great effort given the circumstances.
Yep.
Third and sixth at Renaissance before last year. Those were in trickier conditions, and I think they're more relevant to this year. You say not quite the stellar form. Had he beaten Scheffler, and you're talking about it having to be the world number one to beat him in a playoff back at the Travelers. Yep. Had he been coming into this with a win on his penultimate start, then I think we'd be looking at him and saying, well...
He absolutely ticks
that current form box. So, yeah, Tom Kim for me, 50-1 I got yesterday. He has been nibbled in a little bit, but there's still 40s and 45s out there with extended places, which I think is... a good combination and a good price for Tom this week. The only other one I've backed in that kind of bracket is Tony Finau, 50-1. Now, this is more an each way play for me, and I know you kind of like your each way almost cover bets over for the big major championships, and I kind of see the logic with this because, you know, Tony gets an each way place here that pretty much levels the week out, and then the rest of it's you kind of free rolling. So if there's one player that you could find in the each way places this week quite readily, it would be for me Tony Finau. He's got 11 top tens from 33 major starts over the course of his career. He's been an absolute major top 10 machine over the years. 18th here back in 2016 at Royal Troon. He was 6th going into Sunday. And his last three starts on tour, 8th, 3rd and 5th. That 3rd was at the US Open. That was his best major finish for 5 years. Plays really well in the breeze. And for me, crucially, absolutely no water here that he's going to find.
I say there's no burns, there's nothing. Well, there is some water. There's the Irish Sea if he's completely wayward off the opening six tee boxes, but yes.
Yeah, well, if he finds nothing inbound. The Irish Sea, if he finds the Irish Sea, then it's his own fault. But I think as an each-way punt, Tony Finau, again, 50-1, I think that is the play.
So, his approach play of late has been absolutely immaculate.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
The thing with Tony is he just, if it's a setup that forces him to take driver out of his hands on a lot of these holes, I fancy his chances. Mm. If I'm seeing Tony Finau with less than driver on a lot of tee boxes, I think he's got a great shout.
Yeah. He's just got to find a way to navigate around those bunkers. And if that's the way he does it, then, can see him finding his way into a semi-contending position. And, if he pays back at 50-1 with an each-way place, then happy days. And, at one point in his career, I think he could go on and potentially win a major championship. A couple of third place finishes now would suggest that he's getting closer and closer. So we shall see. But the four for me then, Tony Finau, Tom Kim, Colin Morikawa, and up top, Shane Lowry. Now, I know you were beavering away yesterday at some three-figure chances as well. So
I did, yeah. I've got three of those. Just to recap on the last 54 hole scoring at the Scottish Open before we move on. McIntyre 195, Scott 196, Aaron Rye 198, and then 199 a tie, Langask, Wyndham Clark, Victor Perez, Tom Kim, Xander Schauffele. So right, that just shows you about the Tom Kim momentum coming in. Mm. Yeah, I've gone for three longer shots. I don't think it's a bad shout at the... If there's one major where crazy numbers just hit, it's this one. I mean, last year, Harman 110-1 won it. The runner-up spots were crazy. 100-1 Jason Day. 200-1 Sepp Straka. 350-1 Emiliano Grillo. Now, Grillo had won at Colonial a few months beforehand. And listen to this one. Shubhanka Sharma was a tie for 8th at 1,500-1. Madness.
Yeah.
Year before that, Cam Young, 2nd, 110-1. Brian Harman, 175-1. 6th. So you can just go through, go way back to 2009 when we started Golf Betting System. It's just a parade of longer shots getting in the mix. I mean, that year, that was the year of Tom Watson, 750-1 in a head-to-head with Stuart Sink at Turnberry. Now, I'm not suggesting that anything like that's going to happen this year, but it's worth having some decent players in your armoury. Right, first off, no links experience whatsoever. But you just probably said the same about Cam Young when he finished 2nd at 110-1 in 2022 at St Andrews. Akshay Bhatia. Now, I know that's a player, Paul, that's very very close to your wallet and very, very close to your heart over recent tournaments. But if there's one thing you can say about Akshay, there's a few things you can say about him. Young, talented. He's up 75 spots in the World Golf Rankings this year. He's now sitting in the top around the top 25. And he's just a bloody good golfer. So he's in red hot form as well. Now, yep. It could have been hotter for you because clearly you had him when he was T2 at the Rocket Mortgage Classic in Detroit and three putted from about 20 feet to actually miss out on a playoff.
Yeah.
So it's a sore one for you, but we've seen this before. Someone arrives, red hot form. One thing you do notice about Akshay's numbers, just looking at the predictor model data that we pulled together, very comfortable in the wind. You just look at his record, very comfortable by the sea. Now, I'm not suggesting that Royal Troon this week is going to be anywhere like the Bahamas, but he won his Korn Ferry Tour title in the Bahamas on the coastal golf course. He's finished second at Puerto Rico. He's also had top 15 finishes this year at Kapalua, where he was second going into the final round. That was one Chris Kirk won. He's also finished top 15 at Sony Open, at Wailea and Torrey Pines this year. So clearly, you know, gets to the coast, not an issue. Doesn't mind it at all. So I just thought 100-1 about a guy in red hot form. I got that full 10 places each way with Betfred on Akshay Bhatia. He's the kind of one where you'd look back and go, no links form whatsoever. Didn't put him up. But then when you looked at his form, it was like, well, he was an absolute, so obvious. He was just playing so well.
Yeah. No, I can see your logic. Kind of fits that Cam Young potential mould, doesn't he? And we've seen what he's done over the last couple of Open Championships.
Absolutely. Now, I know another one that you were fairly sweet on that you've mentioned to me over the past couple of weeks. And Barry also mentioned off mic recently that he was one that was on his kind of radar. And I can see completely why, because he, again, he's playing some decent enough golf. I wouldn't say it's Akshay Bhatia-like, but actually, when you look at his numbers recently, he's kind of level in terms of strokes gained current form with Bhatia. That's Victor Perez, the Frenchman.
Yeah.
Now, we've been mentioning quite a lot recently, not Perez, but the other guy whose name... Oh, Mathieu Pavon. Now, again, he's another one that I wouldn't be surprised with, but I couldn't get this price on Pavon. Perez, I managed to get the full 12 places each way, the maximum amount of each way places I could get on Victor Perez at 160-1 with Boyle Sports via their each way extra facility. They call it pick your place, don't you? Don't they at Boyle Sports?
Yep.
So not their main outright market, but I've gone in their 12 places market, taken 160-1 on Victor Perez, who again plays some nice golf. Third at the Canadian Open, 12th at the Memorial. We know that that's absolutely loaded. 44th at the Travelers and a sneaky 10th last week at the Scottish Open. He's had a top 12 at the Oak Hill PGA Championship last season in the in a major. And also another with Alfred Dunhill Lynx Championship form. He won that in 2019 at St Andrews. They also played Carnoustie and King's Barnes in that three-court rota. Yep. So he just, you know, he ticks a lot of boxes. He's a kind of guy that's not the longest. He's pretty straight off the tee, putting very, very well at the moment and a very, very progressive approach game. So I don't think, I don't think it's something you're going to see a tidal wave of money going on. But Victor Perez, I took him at 160-1 with the full 12 places each way. I think you might need as many places as you can get for him. But the one of those guys I could see, he's 250-1, 8 places right now with Bet365. So, yeah, as you said earlier, pick your poison effectively. As short as 150-1 in some spots. In fact, 125-1 with Betfair. Betfair Sportsbook, 125-1 in their 12 places overall general market. I picked him up at 160 in a 12-place market with Boyle Sports. The other one, if we're talking about a bit of rough weather, if we're talking about a tournament where someone with a decent short game could just linger and hang about, because this golf course, small greens, tremendously difficult bunkering around those greens. If you can find someone who can just navigate themselves around, you know, the magic bean sort.
Yeah.
You know, when you see the coverage, all of a sudden they're chipping in for par from the bunker, chipping in for birdie out of a bunker, that kind of player. Mm. Your Mackenzie Hugheses, your Jordan Spieths.
Jordan Spieth, yeah.
Yeah. The one I chose, the one with a bit of background, the one who actually finished T2 last year at the Open, Jason Day. And yeah, I can't say that his record for tee to green's great this season. But even so, he's not playing bad golf. But the numbers that really grabbed me about Jason Day, 23rd for scrambling so far on the PGA Tour this year, 39th for strokes gained around the green, 16th for sand save percentage, and 5th for strokes gained putting so far on the tour this year. So his short game is razor sharp. So if I could see a kind of name up there, a decent major champion winner, ex-world number one, who hasn't got the best of form heading in, but all of a sudden just gravitates because a lot of players are finding it difficult in uncertain weather and unexpected weather directions. Day might be one of those, you know. He's also under a bit of pressure in the President's Cup. I know he would get a captain's pick from Mike Weir. I'm not daft. But someone like Jason Day would want to qualify automatically. And he's under a bit of pressure from Minwoo Lee, Adam Scott after last week, and Corey Connors for an automatic spot. So, you know, just a few things lining up there. Motivationally, his game's good around the greens. The kind of guy that could just sort of scramble his way around and be a factor come Sunday. I'm in for Jason Day. 110 to 1 I got on that one. Betfred, 10 places each way. So Bhatia, 100 to 1. Day, 110 to 1. And Victor Perez, 160 to 1. There's 250 to 1s out there if you want to take 8 places each way. Anything else on the Open, Paul, or are we done?
No, very good. No, I expect if Barry was here, then he'd be on Padraig Harrington at 300 to 1 or thereabouts with the extra places. I can't believe that he wouldn't be, but we'll catch up with him afterwards and see exactly where he's got to on that. Matthew Southgate, I've just had a little punt on because I backed him last week, missed the cut, and I know exactly what will happen. He'll go and perform well this week without a bean on it. So I've circumvented that and just to satisfy my own curiosity.
Where did you back him?
300 to 1. That was 365 with the 8th place option on.
So when he finishes tied for 11th, there'll be another tale of woe, yeah?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I couldn't come onto a podcast and not have a tale of woe on a Tuesday morning. It wouldn't feel right.
True.
Yeah. Perhaps it all changes this week.
There is another tournament ongoing. I'll quickly run you through some selections I've got for the Barracuda over in California. That's the opposite event this week. 4 runnings here at Old Greenwood Golf Course, which, by the way, is a Jack Nicklaus design. It's a reasonable field, you know. A few of the sort of players that thought they might squeak into the Open are in the field. Keith Mitchell being the favourite. If you're backing Keith Mitchell as a favourite, all I wish you is the very, very best of luck. Teal Bjornsson, 25 to 1. Taylor Pendrith, 25 to 1. Sam Stevens, 28 to 1. Mark Hubbard. Patrick Rogers, my old post-it note of doom friend, 33 to 1. Mac Meisner, 33 to 1. Winners of this have been priced at 33 to 1, Richie Rawinski, 66 to 1, Eric Van Ruin, who isn't flying back from Scotland to play in it. He was in the entry list as of Monday. Your old mucker Cesarevi, I wouldn't be surprised if you're going to tip him up again, 40 to 1. Akshay Bhatia won this last year, just showed you how things can change in 12 months of golf, 40-1. So 40-1, 40-1, 66-1, and 33-1, the winners here, last four renewals. Right. I have gone for two 40-1 chances. One is Nick Dunlap. You might remember him. He won the American Express as an amateur in January in California. He shot 29 under par to do that. He was the first amateur to win a PGA Tour event since Phil Mickelson in 1991 at the Tucson Open. The thing with Nick was that even though he won the American Express, his $1.51 million prize purse actually went to Christian Bezuidenhout.
It did, yeah.
Because Nick was an amateur. Yeah. Didn't get one FedEx Cup point. So it's just interesting. He's sitting there at the moment. He's got a two-year exemption. He's 95th in the FedEx Cup. So if he wants to get into the playoffs, he needs to improve 25 places in the next month to get his first taste of playoff golf. And there's just signs recently with him. 12th at the Memorial. Now, the Memorial, signature level event, had all the best players in the world at it, who played for the PGA Tour, of course, finished 12th. He was 7th heading into Sunday. He was 10th at the Rocket Mortgage Classic 3 weeks ago. So he's in better form, plays very, very well on low-scoring events. They played the Stableford scoring here, so it's 5 points for an eagle. I think that's right. 2 for a birdie.
That's it, yeah.
And then, of course, negative points from for bogeys and double bogeys. I think that scoring will suit Dunlap. So I'm on 1.5 points each way at 40-1 with Ladbrokes, 7 place each way on Nick Dunlap. By the way, he won the US Amateur last year in Colorado at a golf course called Cherry Hills Country Club. Now, of course, Colorado, Denver, Mile High can clearly play at altitude. That was another good tick in the box for me with him. Cherry Hills, from memory, they did play a BMW Championship there many, many years ago. I think
they did, yeah.
It was Bent Poa, the greens. Mm. And if that's the case, they'd be similar to the greens this week at Old Greenwood. The other one I'm taking at 40-1, again, 1.5 points each way, again with Ladbrokes, 7 place each way, Neil Shipley. Now, I warn listeners as well, these prices were taken before Eric Van Rooyen's withdrawal, so I got them very, very early Tuesday morning. A lot of firms still had him listed. So you're seeing a lot of restricted odds now, as one of the joint favourites has been taken from the betting market. Neil Shipley, I know that you've been aware of this guy. Talented lad, 26th at the US Open as an amateur, then turned pro the week after. He's had a 9th at the Victoria Open on the PGA Tour of Americas. He's had a 20th and a 6th over his first 4 tournaments as a professional. Seems to hit the ball nicely. Just a good all-round game from what I'm seeing of his numbers. Nothing quoted on the PGA Tour, of course, because he's only played a small number of PGA Tour events. But yeah, Neil Shipley, he was the guy that Nick Dunlap beat 4-3 in the US Amateur Match Play Final last year at that Cherry Hills Country Club in Denver, Colorado. Hmm. So again, would suggest he's comfortable at altitude and doing the maths.
Yep.
The final one, and this is the kind of player that we would have missed and have missed over many, many golf betting system podcasts and just over the history of the website in the past. 60-1 with Boyle Sports, 8 places each way. I don't understand, Paul, why Pearson Coody was 60-1 to win this.
I know. Mad.
Would you have had a bit of that? Or have you had a bit of that?
Yeah. My only bet for the week is Pearson Coody. Yeah, absolutely. I was expecting to see him right towards the top end of that market. So to see him in the, between 50 and 66-1, depending where you bet. Yeah, absolutely.
Why is Mac Meisner 33-1? And the guy that, as I said at the very outset of this podcast, didn't really lose the ISCO Championship, did everything right, got to a playoff, and then got beat by someone that chipped in from 43 feet. Why is he 60-1?
No. Makes no logical sense, does it? Yeah, as you say, it led after every round last week. A couple of eagles, 24 birdies on the week. That's going to score big for this format this week. And it's just whether he can brush off that disappointment and take his overall performance as a positive. I think he probably can. We saw him go from fourth to first back on the Corn Ferry back in 2022 when he won his maiden Corn Ferry tournament. And I think he can do the same again here. I think that's a cracking price, really do.
I'll tell you the other thing I really liked about when you dug into his Corn Ferry history. He does travel.
Mm.
You know, he's a Texan, but he isn't one of these guys that only plays in the southern United States on Bermuda grass, anything like this. You listen to this. He's got 3 Corn Ferry Tour victories. Great. Not one thing you can say about Rico Hoey, who threw in bogey when he had the tournament at his mercy last week. 3 wins have come in Maine, Panama, and Montana. So if you want different geographies, there's 3 quite extremes. Northeast, Central America, and Northwest America, United States. One of those victories was on bent poa mixed greens. One was on bent grass. The other one was on, I believe, Panama. They're playing on Bermuda. And like you said, he also carries form. That first win came off a 4th place the week before. He then did what you just highlighted. He won at the Highland Springs Country Club in Montana, which is at altitude on bent grass greens. And then the week after that, after winning, he still finished 6th in Utah. Again, desert golf played in altitude. He's actually got a 6th and a 10th at Utah. So I just like the geography, like the fact that he can clearly play in thin air. And 60-1, I was scanning down the... I was expecting to see him at like 30, 33s around there with Chan Kim and the likes of that. Yeah, exactly. I just kept going and going and going. I couldn't understand it. He is top of my 8-week strokes gain current form charts. And he's 60-1.
Mm-hmm.
Line me up. So I'm on Pearson Coody. So yeah, Nick Dunlap, wrong? Neil Shipley, Pearson Coody, and you are also on Pearson Coody at the Barracuda. Mm. You're not having a bit of chairs at 100-1?
No, Coody's the only one that I've backed so far. I might have a deeper look once I've finished off all of the content for the Open Championship.
I gave Chez a real level of respect. Good look into his nut. The only thing that Chez is doing really badly at the moment is actually driving the ball. And when he won here, he was actually in the top 11 for strokes gained off the tee over the last 8 weeks.
Mm.
And that's a guy that was hitting it 280 off the tee. That was how iron straight he was. So, yeah, the approach play was great last week. It's just the driving just isn't quite right. Mm. But, yes, another one potentially to have a look at, I think, is Chez Reavie. Very good on bent poa putting surfaces. Right, Paul, I hope the listeners have enjoyed our Open Championship preview. I hope your bets go well this week.
Yeah, you too. Best of luck.
Have you ever had an Open Championship winner?
Oh, now there's a question. Not that I can recall, no. It tends to be one that kind of eludes lots of places from memory.
Don't be ashamed, Paul.
No, I'm trying to pluck my memory.
I've never won the Masters, believe it or not, since 2009. I've won plenty of PGA championships, but never the Masters.
Mm.
Weird stuff happens. Well, yeah. I hope this is the year, mate.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Enjoy the golf, listeners, wherever you are in the world. And we will be back, of course, next week. I have got, I believe, 3M Open.
Yes.
What have you got?
It's the DP World Tour summer holiday next week. So they're off for a week, and then it's the Olympics after that.
Of course, the Olympics, which we will have some coverage of, by the way, listeners. Played at the Open de France, not the Open de France, played at Le Golf National.
That's it. Yeah.
Enjoy your Open, wherever you are, and we'll see you again next week.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved. With all the stats and the tips and so much more, 'cause it's the golf betting system, the golf